Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Welcome again to the final old school answer of the week. If you weren't paying attention, on last week's show, we announced we're going to take a brief hiatus to retool, revoke, revise, and realize this show.
Well, it was this week's show, because you won't have it ready to go until Tuesday. Let's be fair.
That's not true.
Let's be fair.
Shut your mouth hole. The answer of the week is going to get an upgrade, too. It's going to be even cooler. You guys are going to love it.
Yeah, I mean, let's not get into specifics, because we haven't figured it all out.
Regardless, you will want to stay tuned to this feed to get the information on how to subscribe and where to subscribe to our new feed. It's going to be all new, all different, all sexy, rebooted, relaunched, nowed, you'd, everything.
Rebirthed,
all of it.
Yeah, if you are one of the people that listens to this show only, and I know that there are some of you.
It's true.
By the time this goes up, I will have a post on the actual website that you can read to figure out what's going on. It'll have all the deets in it.
And we'll keep you fully informed using our entire social media empire. But for now,
our arsenal.
We are playing the answer of the week. Here's how it works. Joe Patrick posts the question of the week on the THN forums in the question of the week section. It's aptly named.
Yeah, it's.
You can go there and answer, write as much as you would like, or you can call us at 402-819-4894, or send us an email to twoheadednerd@gmail.com with your MP3 answer. Keep it under 2 minutes. Them's the rules. We want to get everybody on the air. Or you can call us at 402-819-4894. That is our Google Voice line.
This is all meaningless because there's not going to be a question for them to answer.
Well, there will be in the future. And if they're listening to old episodes, we have to pretend like nothing's happening.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So, Joe Patrick, my name's Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast. Sitting across from me is our head questioneer, Mr. Joe Patrick. Joey.
Yes.
Why don't you tell these kids about the question of the week?
This week's question came from forum user Josh R98. I say it's Josh Rector. Matt's not so sure.
We still don't know, do we?
I don't know if he called in or not.
Oh, okay.
The question boils down to this, because I don't have the whole thing in front of me. What comic book creator did you become a fan of before they became a well-known industry name? Who did you love before they were cool?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Since we're dealing with hipster questions and hipster kids here, they always know what's cool before it's actually cool. We decided to make a hipster drink, and what is more hipster than a coffee cocktail? Huh? This is fair-sourced Brazilian bean.
Okay.
Roasted by a good friend of mine, right? Served with Kahlua and a little bit of my favorite bourbon, Basil Hayden.
Served in a glass that says motherfucker on it.
It says motherfuck this, motherfuck that. I'm drinking out of a Hellboy mug.
Okay.
That was my old journalism mug.
Sure. Yeah.
Sat on my J. Jonah Jameson desk.
Nice.
Excelsior. Ooh, that's a tasty boozy coffee.
Wah, yah, yah, wah. How did the hipster burn his mouth?
Oh.
Because he drank his coffee before it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Fart noise.
Fog horn.
Let's get into it.
Let's get right into it. Calling from the 612. I don't know who this is. I don't know where the 612 is either.
Me neither.
Yeah.
They'll say.
How's it going, guys?
Dude.
Your question of the week, and my answer for you has to be Brett Booth. I know he's not one of your favorites. You guys not a real big fan of his, but you gotta admit
it's not about us,
he's doing right now and where he came from is pretty damn amazing. He's doing a new Titans run. He's also done Nightwing and Justice League. He's also done The Flash. But where I first heard about him was, wait for it, Thundercats, Dogs of War. I know, not many people like that book. I, for one, loved it because I love me some Thundercats. Oh. You may also know about him from the Anita Blake run. Yeah, that's it.
Anita Baker is cool somebody different.
Story too. I like Brett Booth. I don't care what anyone says. I dig his work. Take it easy, guys. Until next time.
I prefer Anita Baker to Anita Blake. Wait, I first found Brett Booth.
I thought, isn't... I
way
thought
back Anita, on Backlash.
I thought Anita Baker was the woman that accused Clarence Thomas of rape in the 90s.
I think that was a different Anita Baker.
Oh, okay.
I think there's two.
Maybe her name wasn't Anita Baker. No,
that was Aretha Franklin.
Sorry.
I first encountered Brett Booth on Backlash way back in the day. Early Wildstorm title.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, loved it. Loved it.
Brett Booth, definitely a student of the Jim Lee School, came out of Wildstorm.
Big time.
My first exposure to Brett Booth really was when he took over for Jim Lee on the Heroes Reborn Fantastic Four.
Oh.
Jim Lee only drew like the first five.
Yeah.
And then Brett Booth came in and took it over.
So I out-hipstered both of you with my Backlash call.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
Eat that.
You're old.
I'm old. Thanks, D. Liked Brett Booth before Brett Booth was, we'll put cool in quotes.
Hey.
No. Hey, Booth disappeared for a long time. He really did. He fell off and then just popped back up really in the last 5 or so years.
I don't know if that's true. I think he's been working pretty consistently, just not on books that you read.
I don't know.
Even like D said, he was doing those Thundercats books. That was like in the early 2000s, dude.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're right.
And those Anita Blake Vampire Hunter comics. Yeah. Like the dude was working.
Okay.
But yeah, now super high profile books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job.
Thanks, D. Always good to hear from you. But right now, time for my man, Mr. Randy Andrews.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week. This week, you asked, what creator did we follow or like before they were cool? Well, guys, I'm going with writer Peter David, who has done so much for novels and comics in the past. He co-wrote some of the Star Trek New Frontier novels. He wrote for Babylon 5, for many Star Trek novels, including the Q titles, and he began even writing for The Rocketeer, as well as Spider-Man 2099. He even did his own miniseries like The Phantom, which I may be biased, but is some of his best work. He still continues to write to this day with the titles of Spider-Man 2099 and many others. So that's my answer this week, guys. Hope you like it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.net. And check out my podcast at Podbean and iTunes. My music this week is from the movie The Phantom. It's entitled The Phantom, and it's by David Newman. See you in a week. Bye for now.
Did he actually say the name of the person he's talking about, or did it like blip out there?
Said Peter David.
Oh, well, it had those glitches at the beginning.
He said Peter David.
Okay, yeah.
Not to call you out here, Randy, but older guys like us... We knew that Peter David had a pretty rich history before he did any of the stuff you mentioned.
It might surprise you to know that Peter David has been writing comic books for something like 35 years.
Very long time. But for a younger generation, I could see how like maybe they stumbled upon Peter David a different way.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.
Sure. And Randy can play music in his calls and on his show because he has fair use on his side. So when he talks about soundtrack... He
Why?
Can play soundtracks
because out. He's reviewing them or
just discussing them. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. We can't do that.
Yeah, we can do that, Matt. It's just that we have to
make comic book noises.
After every song clip you play, we have to stop and discuss
briefly,
it for 5 minutes.
Briefly. Randy, thanks for your call. I also love Peter David. If you have not read Peter David's old X-Force stuff, go back and do it. His Hulk run, also amazing back in the day. Oh, love Peter David. Speaking of hipsters, the biggest hipster we have in the show, Mr. Jimmy Kettner.
Hey, Joe and Matt, Kettner here. Well, guys, this week, a lot of potential answers jumped to mind. See, a bunch of folks who I attended art school with back around the turn of the century have since gone on to do some pretty awesome things in comics. And I was going to DQ all those guys because I don't want to be some name-droppy turd. And it's not like I was so cool to
do
their work back then.
Be a name-dropping turd.
Just my classmates. So I had an answer that didn't rely on a personal connection. But in light of this week and the election results, I thought it was important to shine a spotlight on this creator's work because he's doing something really great in comics and telling stories that are more important than ever considering the America that we're living in right now. That creator's name is Nate Powell. Now, Nate has gotten tons of acclaim for this year for his work on March, his collaboration with Representative John Lewis and Andrew Aden, chronicling Lewis's life as part of the American civil rights movement. It's incredible work. And as a result, Nate has been on the New York Times bestseller list, and he's winning tons of awards and appearing on cable news shows. And it's awesome. I couldn't be more happy for his success. And his commitment to telling this story is amazing in all the small details and the emotional beats that he brings to life on the page. But Nate is definitely more than a gifted illustrator, and he's been writing and illustrating comics since the 90s. I first saw his work on the cover of the punk zine Heart Attack, and when I made the connection that it was the same dude who was in my history of illustration class, I was so pumped. Even his student work just blew me away. He did this comic called Conditions when we were in school, and that hand-stapled comic is still a gem in my collection. Everyone should do themselves a favor and pick up Nate's work, Walkie Talkie, Tiny Giants, Swallow Me Whole, and of course the now complete three volumes of March, which are both inspiring and an example of how to ready ourselves for the struggles moving forward.
Nate Powell's a total badass. This dude knows Nate Powell, and we don't have a Nate Powell introduction. Really? Come on, Ket Nerd.
In his email, Ket says that the music that you hear is by Sufi Nun Squad with their song called Tomorrow with no O after the T, Tomorrow. And Nate Powell was one of the vocalists of that.
Really?
Band.
No shit. God, that is a, wow. That's some deep hipster shit there.
Yeah. Very somber, a very somber Ket Nerd.
Yeah. I think we caught him right after the election results.
Well, yeah, this question is 2 weeks old. And yeah. So at the time of that recording, things were still pretty fresh.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But now America's great again, and we all feel good.
Yeah, you know what? It's all a steaming pile of shit. Yeah, so. No,
everything is fixed and great.
Trump broke our iTunes feed. Yeah, and now we can't have a podcast. It's
with
all
the racists
great.
In charge, and everything's better. Jimmy, always good to hear from you.
Oh.
We both love Nate Powell. It's a great answer. I think we have a new caller here, though.
Who the hell is this person?
I don't know. I have no idea. Spells Tim with two M's. Not a name. Sorry.
Hey, nerds. Willow here. Sadly, I don't think I'm quite old enough to answer this question properly, but I am eager to throw my hat into the nerd ring, so I'll answer it anyway. And you can decide if this qualifies. In 2011, I did a report on Ada Lovelace Byron. I stumbled across Sidney Padua's webcomic, The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage. This was near the end of the Lovelace and Babbage versus the Client arc. That was also about the time that I found out about a bunch of awesome things that I still love to this day, like steampunk, the debugging crowbar, and, of course, the pipe-smoking, gambling-addicted Ada Lovelace. Her comic incarnation is only marginally more badass than the real thing. Now you can get the webcomics in one killer hardcover edition from Pantheon. Pick it up. It was nominated for an Eisner, and everyone should be reading it. I'm not sure that this qualifies Padua as a star, at least not yet, but mark my words, one day she will be. Later, Gators.
Totally qualifies. I did not get your name. I couldn't understand it.
Willowa. It's in the email.
Willowa?
Willowa.
Willowa! Okay.
I don't think either one of us were familiar with Sidney Padua.
I do remember seeing the name of this book, though, on the Eisner nominations.
Lovelace and Babbage?
Yes. And the art is amazing.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful.
Really, really good stuff. Very classic looking.
So what Willowa was saying is that she might not qualify as a star yet, but she's a star on the rise.
Like if you're nominated for an Eisner, you're doing okay.
I'm into it.
Yeah, totally. That counts. We just got schooled by some kid.
Great.
Smart little bastards. Willow, welcome aboard. Hope to hear from you again. Ada Lovelace. I got to check that out.
Sorry you called in just in time for the cancellation of this program.
Lovelace and Babbage. I'm going to check that out. It does look really good. Let's go back to the voicemail. It's our mystery husband.
I'm glad we were able to talk to him one last time.
I know.
Hey, honey, it's me. I'm trying my best not to be frustrated and feeling like technology is against our love. So here are some answers.
Yeah, his last two calls didn't work out.
The last time I got cut off, I was trying to say that the most interesting underused AI is Unit from Gillen's Sword run, who popped up on Uncanny X-Men and Siege from Secret War is a very interesting character, doesn't ever get used. I don't have a G.I. Joe answer because I am a child of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So, favorite turtle was Donatello, whose shell opened up and had a bunch of weapons in it. Creator that I knew before I was into before everybody else, Jeff Lemire. He had just completed the Nobody for Vertigo.
Oh, yeah.
He started Sweet Tooth, which is how I got into him, Sweet Tooth number one. Vertigo was doing a very awesome promotion where they would sell the first issue of a comic for $1. I tried lots of comics that way. Well, maybe 3 or 4. But Sweet Tooth was amazing. Loved it the whole way through. Jeff Lemire is one of my favorite creators right now. Not in love with most of his superhero work, but almost anything of his creator-owned stuff is great. So there's that. I will. Hopefully this all worked and you heard my answers. If not, I'll try it again another day. Talk to you later. Love you. Bye.
It worked, sweetheart. We got you.
Good
news.
You too. Good news.
I forgot about the Nobody.
Yeah, a graphic novel, yeah.
Yeah, that was his first DC Vertigo work, I believe.
Maybe, yeah.
I believe so.
He's done other books. He did Revolver, or was that Matt Kent?
That was Kent.
That was Matt Kent.
Yeah.
Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent, they're practically the same person.
I know.
You said it last week. They really are the Matt Damon and Ben Affleck
totally.
Of comics.
Without a doubt.
And you know what? It's interchangeable which one fills which role because they're both great.
Thank you very much for your call, Mystery Husband. We love you so much. I just looked at the title of the subject of the Orca's email. Best guy I found early, comma, which sounds gay.
Hey.
Back in 1999, DC did a miserable, shitty, cash grab sequel of Kingdom Come called The Kingdom. I think it was 3 issues. Looked like a bunch of MI students tried to draw the characters of Kingdom Come on old newsprint in the dock. It was really bad. To expand upon the universe and suck more cash at all us nerds, they also produced a bunch of one-shots featuring side characters from the original epic. Most of those sucked too. But one, The Offspring, stood out to me due to the artist. Guy named Vincent Dagan, a young Brit who used its pen name Frank Quitely. He'd been working on some other things, but nothing too mainstream. From that point forward, I grabbed up wherever he drew, even if it was crazy Grant Morrison stuff about cyborg pets, or even shitty Bite Club covers. Of course, his epic, All-Star Superman, could be the best series ever. For real. It has to be in the conversation. If you ain't reading Jupiter's Legacy, you're a pathetic fuckwit. People criticize him for being slow, but Mr. Quietly proves the best things come to those who wait. Kiss, kiss, nerds.
He's right. The Kingdom was terrible.
Disagree, but that's okay.
It was terrible.
The Kingdom was a 2-issue series, two bookends with a bunch of one-shots in between. I believe it was a 5th-week event.
Yeah, I think so. But that Offspring, I forgot. That was Frank Quietly.
Yeah, The Kingdom is what introduced the concept of hypertime to the DC Universe.
Yep, at least so, running around screaming, hypertime!
Hypertime!
Superman and Bugs Bunny, hypertime!
Yeah, I mean, the first issue was drawn by Ariel Olivetti before he started doing all of this Photoshop nonsense.
Yeah.
And the second issue was drawn, I think, by like Mike Zeck or somebody, so it's not like the talent wasn't there. I mean, it is not as good as Kingdom Come, I will concede.
No, it was dumb. It was stupid.
But yeah, that Offspring one shot by Frank Quietly is great. It's just really as good as you'd expect.
Probably
it
pretty
to be.
Hard to find too, I'll bet.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless I don't know how easy one. It is to find those books.
Good answer.
The Orca was none too happy by the hatchet job he perceived that you did to his last installment of Take the Money and Run.
I had to do it for time reasons and reasons of extreme sexism. So
So, Orgia, you heard it here first. Yeah, you did cross a line, and Matt had to do something about it.
Let's go to the GOAT, Mr. Patrick Gauthier. Greatest of all time.
Hey, Joe and Matt. Patrick from Canada calling after a hiatus of my own. Want to let everyone know that there's lots of room up here, so if you prefer a Trudeau to a Trump, give me a call. This is a great question for old guys like me. I've had an opportunity to see a lot of creators kind of start out and rise up through the ranks. So I had a lot that I could have chosen from for this answer. My pick ended up being J.H. Williams III, one of my favorite artists and really the only artist that I kind of follow exclusively. He first caught my attention as a fill-in artist on the Doug Mensch, Kelly Jones run on Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Did a few issues kind of here or there. And then that led me to picking up Chase that he co-created and wrote with Dan Curtis Johnson. Only ran for 9 issues plus the 1 million back in the late 90s, 1998, 99, I think. I just reread it and it still really holds up. And you can see there the beginning of his art style and what he was kind of doing, especially in terms of layout. I was really enjoying his Batwoman. The pre-New 52 stuff with Greg Recca in Detective Comics was fantastic, and then carrying that over with Hayden Blackman in the series before DC fucked that one up. So, yeah, there's my answer. J.H. Williams, the three. Talk to you soon, eh?
Nice use of the three, eh?
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I remember J.H. Williams the third coming onto the scene in the late 90s, mid to late 90s. He did like one of the one shots for Underworld Unleashed. He did a bunch of like just here and there, like really weird things in the late 90s that DC was trying. And then, yeah, Chase was kind of his first big chance at a series of his own. And yeah, I love it.
Yeah. J.H. Williams, man, another guy, slow, but amazing creator. Wow, I totally forgot that Batman stuff he did. It was great. Man, good answer. Patrick, we might be looking you up to relocate the ziggurat real quick here.
How is your real estate underground?
I hear Ontario has a huge underground scene. Right now, Jeffrey Ketchumall lost all of his R adjectives, so he said this might be a repeat.
We'll give him a pass.
Greetings, nerds. It's JD Gotta Catch 'Em All, your ridiculous and erstwhile Poke Trainer, emailing in for the answer of the week. I'm not usually the kind of reader to be up on new talent. Most of the time, I'm late to the party because A, I don't buy many comics, and B, I'm pretty much set on my favorite creators. However, I can think of one creator I've gotten to know primarily through their first major work and my first local con. I met Ibrahim Mustafa at the first ever O Comic Con. I'd read a good portion of his and Christopher Sabella's High Crimes and was pretty hooked, but meeting Ibrahim in person was a delight. He was gracious and friendly, and even did a full-color sketch of Nightcrawler in my notebook. I know he's since gone on to do several titles at the Big Two, including Flash and Mockingbird, and even done an issue of Godzilla and Hell. Since I'm a writer, I usually follow writers, but Ibrahim is definitely an artist I'll keep an eye on.
Great answer.
He's an amazing artist.
We reviewed the High Crimes graphic novel. It's wonderful. He's a really good artist. And I think that he's going to end up being a pretty big name in the
industry.
I think
so, too. I like it.
Doing well for himself. That is a good answer, Jeff.
Is this our final one?
Toots time? Mm-hmm.
As you may recall, our Dungeon Master and THN Comptroller was sucked into a time portal, carelessly left open by one Joe Patrick.
Look, nobody asked him to go poking around down there.
He was humming. He was making lights. You know how he gets. Let's check in with the poor bastard and see where he is.
It's Toots tossed through time.
Guys, I don't know. That portal sent me to 1984. I had to steal some clothes because the One Piece THN ziggurat jumpsuit you gave me really made me stand out, but now I look like the Beyonder when he came to Earth in Secret Wars 2. And I found myself up here at the Center Mall on the corner of 42nd and Center Street, mainly because I wanted to go check out the Devil's Nest Lounge. Man, seeing that lounge growing up, I always wanted to go in there, but it was a forbidden fruit because I was like 13. But I'm stopping into the Little Professor bookstore here on the third floor to see what's up. And, oh, guys, you know, I know what the answer of the week is, the question is anyways, because your little inter-office communicator, BlackBerry, I'm still getting inter-office updates and emails. I don't know if you're getting this.
Just like the lake house.
Receive this while I'm stuck in time like I am, but right here in these D&D modules, there's an artist, William Willingham, who's done a lot of the artwork here on the covers of these modules, like White Plume Mountain, and even monsters inside the book here, this hardcover, The Fiend Folio. Yes, that Bill Willingham, who created the fables in the 80s, was a illustrator for TSR and did a bunch of stuff for Dungeons and Dragons. So there you go. That's my early cool thing before they were cool. So I'm going to go up here to the Devil's Nest Lounge, and oh my god, oh, that portal's back! Oh no, dudes, I'm being sucked in.
It's bonded to his time signature. Oh, that's terrible!
Damn it.
Okay, I'll fire up the Retardus to 1984. Let's see if we can figure out where he went from there.
Cannot leave that guy alone in the ziggurat.
Lord, before he was Bill, he was William Willingham.
Yeah, hey.
Artist for D&D. I didn't even know that. I knew he did like elementals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was doing that.
Yeah, he was a fantasy artist.
Yeah, he was an artist before he was a well-known writer. Not a lot of people know that either.
He still draws from time to time. When DC launched that series Shadow Pact.
Oh yeah.
He drew the first three so issues.
That's right. I forgot about that.
He's a good artist. Wooly Toots, I like him.
Revealing his age. We're old men.
Oh yeah.
So as the oldest hipsters in the world, as the oldest hipsters in the room, should we get into ours? See if we can impress these.
I mean, he was 13 in 1984. I don't even want to do that math.
I know. Joey, you want to go first?
Yes, I'll go first. I feel like this is very familiar. Are we not going to pick favorites? Let's just not pick favorites.
Pick favorites.
It's our last hurrah for now.
It's our last old school.
Everyone's our favorite.
Yeah, you're all our favorite.
So we did a version of this question before, and so I think I talked about this answer once already, but it's still a pretty good one. In the 80s, Marvel put out a weird little project called the Marvel Tryout Book, and it was this big, oversized, almost like a graphic novel sized, but it was the dimensions of large comic book sheets, large comic book paper, so like 11 by 17 or 14 by 17 or whatever. And inside were various pages that you could try your hand at scripting, penciling, inking, coloring, and lettering. And then the idea was you would submit whatever your chosen thing was to Marvel for this contest, and and you would win.
It was like the turtle or the pirate you could draw for the art school tryouts.
Sort of, right. And the inker that won was a guy named Doug Hazelwood, who went on to have a very strong career in the 90s. Not so much, he's not around so much these days, but Doug Hazelwood was best known for his work as an inker on the Superman titles, specifically on Tom Grummett during Adventures of Superman and later Superboy. So right at like the peak of Superman, Death of Superman mania, Doug Hazelwood was right there on those books. In fact, he might not have to work anymore because he was all over those books. I don't know.
I hope so, but that's
I don't know how much money the creators made from that stuff.
$5,000 a page, baby.
But anyway, yeah, Doug Hazelwood was the inker that won. The penciler that won went on to do some fill-in work here and there. I first saw his work on an issue of Web of Spider-Man. It was, I think, Web of Spider-Man number 52. Or maybe 48. It's one of those right there around the 50 mark. And it was a story where Spider-Man is fighting crime lords from Texas that just happen to be werewolves, the Lobo brothers. And from his fill in there, like, I loved his work. And it's like, oh man, that guy is great. I'm going to follow him wherever he goes.
Okay.
And then he went on to do some New Universe stuff. He drew Night Mask. And then he eventually landed on a little book near and dear to my heart called The New Warriors.
Oh, boy.
And that artist was Mark Bagley, Mark Bagley was the artist that won the Marvel tryout contest.
Web of Spider-Man 53.
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, he just started doing these little things here and there, and eventually he got this hit book at Marvel, which then spun into a long term as penciler of Amazing Spider-Man. Very long, in fact. Gosh, like something like 65 issues or something. He was on that book for a long time. And yeah, from there, he co-created Ultimate Spider-Man. And for a time, I would say he was probably Marvel's most recognizable artist because...
Oh, yeah. I think that's fair.
All of the merchandising on products in the early 2000s was based on his Ultimate Spider-Man cover designs.
Yeah.
So his artwork is on everything, was on everything back
yeah.
then.
Yeah, it really was.
And yeah, Mark Bagley. I knew him when.
Go figure.
Yeah.
And he looks totally different. His style looks completely different back then.
You know, it's still recognizable to me because I've been reading it the whole time.
A little bit. It's there.
But it's, he's definitely come a long way. It's
without a doubt.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just going back and look at some of these images and man, I would not look at some of these covers and say, oh yeah, that was Mark Bagley.
Well, the covers, I don't know if he did the cover.
Oh, okay. That could maybe, I don't know, but yeah, no, I hear you. He's definitely come a long way as an artist. I'll say that.
Web of Spider-Man 53. No, the cover was by Alex Saviuk, who was the regular pencil of Web of Spider-Man.
Right. Okay.
He
was filling in.
Yeah. But Bagley did the interiors.
I'm looking at some of the interiors now. Yeah, you can kind of see it, I guess.
Yeah, like you can look at it and
forget how long that dude has been around.
Yeah, but like if you look, like I'm looking at this panel here that is just of Mary Jane and Aunt May, and you can see it in the faces.
Yeah.
I'm
looking at his Kingpin right now. You can totally see it.
But yeah, Mark Bagley.
Well, I'm going to go way back to the 90s as well. I had just graduated high school in 1993. There was an announcement that the X titles were ending. They were canceling all of them. They were going away. And we all shook our fists and screamed, no. And it turns out we were getting a big event called the Age of Apocalypse. And in the Age of Apocalypse, there were some spinoff titles. Everything changed. You had the Astonishing X-Men instead of the Uncanny X-Men. And you had, Generation Next instead of Generation X. And Excalibre instead of Excalibur.
I'm pretty sure it was still pronounced Excalibur, but...
Yeah, but it looks like Calibre. So I bought them all, naturally. Every single one of them. Had to have them. And really enjoyed all of them. I mean, they were all great stories. There were a bunch of names that I did not recognize that were writing some of those titles. And I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to them. Flash forward later that same year, I'd been reading Doctor Strange, because I was a big Doc Strange fan, and I did not know it was going to be canceled in 6 issues, but because they didn't have like the same announcements where like when we found out on the internet instantly someone was being canceled. So I was just plowing along reading, and we came to a story called Earthquake Logic, I believe it was called. And this was towards the end of that run, the 1988 run, which I still have the entire thing. This would have been Doctor Strange. Yes. Number 80. And a new writer took over by the name of Warren Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
And I recognize the name because he was also the writer on Excalibre, which I just didn't pay any attention to. I thought, oh, that was pretty good. But his Doctor Strange story was so fucking crazy and bizarre. Like, Doctor Strange got a whole new costume for a minute there because they were like, fuck it, the book's getting canceled anyway.
Well, it was that time when everybody was getting a new costume or getting replaced or whatever.
Mark Buckingham was the artist on the book. And there was kind of a British invasion going on at the time, to tell you the truth, the writers and artists. And so they just let them do whatever they wanted. And the end of that story, the way that storyline finished, was just fantastic and bizarre. After that, he did a Dr. Druid storyline with Leonardo Manco, who he had worked previously on Hellstrom with, which is where I think he got his start in Marvel way back in the day. It was that Son of Satan book.
Well, he wrote Doom 2099. So he's been around for a long time.
I think Hellstrom was before that, though, even.
You know that you interchangeably.
Yeah. Hellstrom, Prince of Lies, 1993.
Do you realize that you interchangeably replace Hellstorm and Hellstrom?
Hellstorm. God, sorry.
Damn, and Hellstorm. Like you are totally inconsistent with where you apply those
changes. I do it all the time. Damien, he was writing Hellstorm.
Hellstrom is his name. Hellstorm is his code name.
Yeah. Which is ridiculous. About Damien Hellstrom. Sorry. And I fell in love with Warren Ellis back in the early 90s. And I followed him ever since. Love that guy. Followed him straight to Wildstorm, where he did some amazing stuff. Ugh.
Stormwatch.
Ugh. We're not even hipsters. We're just like old farts.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with being hip. It has everything to do with being decrepit.
Guys, thanks to everybody that answered this question. We are coming back with a new answer of the week. It's going to be slightly retooled. There'll be some new rules that you'll need to pay attention to so we can get your stuff on the air and make it legal-like, if you know what I mean. So pay attention. Follow this feed.
No more coded messages to the Russians.
Pay attention. Follow this feed. We'll have everything you need to know about how to make the jump over to the new show. I want to thank everybody that has called in, everybody that supported the show. Again, we're not going away. Just got to take a little break, retool some stuff. But for now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd signing off.
Good luck with the rest of your lives. We'll never see you again.
It seems Apple has all but neutered the boys. If only they knew how to Google things like copyright law, and how not to piss off Kanye West by using his music illegally. Personally, I'm shocked it took this long. Also, Anita Hill was the woman you were trying to think of. Not the wildly talented and underappreciated Anita Baker. But I would expect nothing less from you morons. If you'd like to answer the question of the week, you can leave Joe and Matt a message at 402-819-4894. Send your MP3 answer to twoheadednerd@gmail.com. Or leave a Skype message for the username twoheadednerd. Share the air and keep your answer under 2 minutes, please.